Whoop, whoop. Whoop, whoop. Whoop, whoop. Whoop, whoop.
Any of those you this time, DeMarco? Did you get
that
any
That was
in?
Me. Yes,
there
sir.
You go.
That was DeMarco.
Outstanding. You know who is probably very quietly and very privately giving us a little whoop whoop, just maybe into his pillow every morning because he doesn't want to be the guy celebrating something that the rest of us are like, oh man, this sucks. What about Clay Helton not having to play Alabama this year? what about Clay Helton, who I would imagine it was getting a little warm in that office with people looking in there like saying, are you done yet? I would imagine that Clay Helton went, hey, the Pac-12 has decided not to play football, in the corner of his office just... I mean, I'm not wrong. Wow. Right?
No. You're right, man. I mean, I think we all knew what was going to happen in that game. Is that fair to say?
I think so.
Yeah. So, and this was going to be it was a big year for Clay Helton. This fall was going to be huge for him. So, you know, of anybody, and no one's happy that you have to push it to spring or your season's getting canceled. Don't get me wrong. But if there is one guy, like you said, on the inside somewhere, that's suppressed, that said, whew, it might be him. You know what I mean? Yeah, I get another chance
Absolutely.
To figure this out and find the secret ingredient to making this thing go. But, yeah, it is weird. I mean, I think he was the first coach to comment, right, in the Pac-12?
Well, he's certainly one of the first. We've heard Carl Durrell at Colorado. By the way, welcome back to the Pac-12, Carl Durrell. Hey. He's at CU right now. But, look, I want to set this up by being sincere for half a second because I believe – that Clay Helton is one of the few college football coaches out there that really does care about his kids, that really does want to make sure that his kids have what they need to be safe, to be healthy going through this whole thing. When I hear him talk and when I read the quotes, he says, I believe Clay Helton, by all accounts, he's a wonderfully nice guy. He's a really good dude that everybody seems to like. Okay, and I'm done with that. Let's move on to the next part. And that is that SC fans need to understand something that's coming up. If they do play in the spring, and we'll see what that looks like, your only opponents are going to be other Pac-12 teams, right? You're probably going to play exclusively a Pac-12 schedule. Pac-12 is not very good. It's just not on the level of the SEC. It's not on the level of the Big Ten, or at least some of the Big Ten teams. You have SC, you've got Oregon, Utah is usually pretty good, and Washington's kind of up and down. You know, sometimes they're good, sometimes they're not. So you got about a third of the conference that's pretty good. Clay Helton could go through a Pac-12 schedule and rack a bunch of wins. Clay Helton could go through and get his 9-10 wins in a Pac-12 season, and now all of a sudden you're stuck with him all over again because we've seen him there long enough to know that this is what it is, that when he had Sam Darnold and Darnold was carving guys up, it looked pretty good. Outside of that, it really hasn't worked because you're not going to get to see him exposed against an Alabama of the world. If he just has to go play UCLA and Cal and Stanford and some of these other places – he's going to win a bunch of games. You're going to be stuck with this dude.
Yeah. That's good for him. Bad.
Good for him. Bad. Look, because
bad for everyone else.
Tell me.
He figures it out. If he runs through a Pac-12, whatever's on your schedule, if you run through it and absolutely dominate, then that might change opinion. But I think missing Alabama for a guy like him, that's, like you said, his seat is about as hot as anybody's in the country, regardless of sport or job. So if he gets run through and that national embarrassment is still there, no matter what he did to the rest of the Pac-12, that's still going to stand out. You're good here against an average conference, but against the elites, you got just run out of the stadium. So it's still going to help him. But if you do and you go annihilate and look great and you start to – build hope in your fan base and on your football team, and that turns the door on recruiting, then, you know, pushing it to the spring or just competing against your Pac-12 opponents can also benefit as long as you look great and dominant doing it.
Okay. USC had two guys drafted in the draft last spring. Let me say that again, DeMarco. USC, the Trojans, had two players drafted. Come on, man. Well, you're not doing something right. USC used to have two guys in the top 10 picks, typically. USC would have nothing but half their team would turn over every year because they were all going to the NFL. They had two guys drafted. And you're a Husky. You played at UW, and you won a national championship there. Washington, I also think, is one of these programs that is a national program. I know that Washington wants to win the Pac-12, but Washington has grander goals than that. The Rose Bowl is great, but they're thinking national championship. USC is certainly that program that winning the Pac-12 is nice. Going to the Rose Bowl is great. It's an incredible opportunity, but USC does not break the huddle looking to win the Pac-12. They break the huddle looking to win the national championship. And they're just not in that conversation. They're not on that level with Ohio State and Oklahoma and Georgia and LSU and Alabama and these other schools that are there. And they were there for forever, really. And they've fallen off.
It just seems like USC is just not a fun place to play anymore. It's just, you know, not the place you want to be. I mean, Alabama seems to have it. Everyone wants to go there. They're what USC used to be. You want to go and be amongst those guys and be on national TV and always be around the national championship talk. UW, my school, it's funny. They have the same emphasis on football as USC, but they're just a cut below Stanford and Cal in terms of academic standards. Mm-hmm. That's the way they've always been. There's always been a battle between the football field and what's going on in the classroom. The professors could care less about athletic success. And the football program, to a certain degree, feel the same way. So there's always going to be that battle. But USC in particular, man, I mean, when LA is hot, when LA is the place to be, and when you start getting guys like Reggie Bush to buy in and you start stacking athletes, then it seems like the whole world wants to be here. But that seems to have shifted to Alabama now. I can't tell you. I go to this barbershop over here in Torrance, and, you know, it's not a hotbed of high school football, but there's some good players that SC used to grab that would round out their depth charts. Now most of these guys are headed to Alabama.
Yeah.
And I'm talking guys with legacies, guys that have relatives that played here at UCLA and USC. They're all headed to Alabama. Without even a word, they're going to the SEC. So for some reason, that power conference or the SEC, the allure of using the SEC as a way station to the NFL, well, that's where SC used to be. And maybe it is the head coach. Maybe it is Clay Helton that's not inspiring those guys to show up. Maybe he's not speaking the right language. But I guarantee you this, Nick Saban is. And he's getting all those kids.
It's culture, right? Because the thing, like you just said, and this is important, the star quarterbacks from modern day and St. John Bosco here in L.A. or Southern California, okay, those are the two of the bit most premier football programs in this whole area. Their quarterbacks are going to Alabama and Clemson.
Wow.
Think about that. The quarterback at modern day and St. John Bosco are going to Alabama and Clemson, not USC, not UCLA. They're going, and it's as simple as this. They want to win, man.
Or they
want to win.
They're going. They're not going to Alabama and Clemson. They're going to Nick and Dabo.
Yep. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Those are the rock star coaches right now. Those are the guys that have the resources and they have that cachet, and you know they say the right things in the media, and kids gravitate towards that. I remember when Oregon was the hot place to go. Coach be damned. It was just Phil Knight had injected a bunch of money and it became the most fun place to play on the West Coast. And they started mining all the talent in Southern California. Right now, everything's headed east. So, you know, if anything, you can say what you want about Clay Helton with his X's and O's, his football acumen. But to me, the difference between him and them is just that it factor, that rock star factor that just makes kids want to gravitate towards those programs.
Pete Carroll had it in spades. You know, absolutely has that swag, that care, the charisma, whatever it is. And you know, if you come to USC, you might be good, but there's no guarantee. If you go to Alabama, you're going to play for the national championship at some point in your career. You're going to. You know how I know? Because they always do.
Yeah.
If you go play for Dabo Swinney at Clemson, it's real likely you're going to play for a national championship at some point, because since Dabo's been the head coach, that's what they do.
And Dick, at Ohio State,
too.
Dick Vermeil told us when he took the job, and this is a pro thing, but it's kind of a college thing like Nick Saban and Dabo Swinney. I can't guarantee you're going to start. I can't even guarantee you're going to make this team. But I can guarantee you this. You're going to be a better football player than, you know, when you leave here, because you're going to work. You're going to compete. We're going to do X, Y, and Z. And it fired up the room. And that's the same stuff you hear. That's the same stuff you used to hear out of Pete Carroll at SC. You're going to compete with the best in the country. What kid doesn't want that? That's
right.
Like Elite 11 camps. That's what you pay for, but you're going to school and you're getting it for free. That's what you want.
The Lakers have a morning game coming up later on this morning. Amin El Hassan will join us next. We'll get his thoughts on where the Lakers are as they play their last tune-up game before the playoffs start. That's coming up on the morning show on 710 ESPN. But all right, final Laker game of the bubble season, at least before the playoffs takes place later on this morning. That's coming up right here on 710 ESPN. But before that, joining us right now is ESPN front office insider Amin El Hassan. Amin, good morning. Hey. How are you feeling?
Hey, gentlemen, what's the word?
You tell me, because I was getting to the point where I was genuinely starting to sweat what I was seeing with the Lakers through those first couple of games. They get the nice win the other night. They shoot the ball a lot better. Is all right with the world, I mean? Can I relax a little bit?
No. Relax because there's a very high likelihood you're going to see the Portland Trailblazers in the first round. And you see what kind of mission Damian Lillard is on. That doesn't look like something you want to walk into relaxed, right? You want to come in with an appropriate level of fear and concern. And so in many ways, them struggling through the seeding games might be a blessing in disguise. It might give them the appropriate fear they need to have rather than going in very confident and very kind of riding high and not take this opponent as seriously as they should.
Well, Big Smooth, are we giving Portland too much credit? I mean, Dame is on fire. I feel you. I love watching him play. You can just feel that energy. But really, when you look at it from a Portland perspective, who do they have that stops LeBron? Are we giving them too much credit for a first-round opponent?
Well, I mean, I don't think we're giving them credit because we're not saying that they're going to win. I think we all think the Lakers are going to win. It's just the question is, at this stage, is it going to be an easy win, or am I going to expend energy? That's a reality because you got to think about. Now that we know the Western playoff picture, mostly if we assume Portland's that team, you're saying this is the Lakers' road to a championship. Got to beat Portland, then you got to beat the winner of Houston and Oklahoma City, then you probably got to beat the Clippers. That's tough. Like those are three potentially very tough series. So the more you can simplify this road, the better. And
fair.
You don't want to waste time. You don't want to waste time. If they were playing the Grizzlies, then you can go in and be like, oh, we got some rest. Oh, you know, we'll get a couple of blowouts in here. We start watching the other games and start game planning for next series. You don't have those luxuries now. You got to go in, and like I said, you can't roll the ball out. You actually have to go out and beat this team. Now, will they beat them? Of course they will, barring injury or illness or something like that. But
a meteor hitting the planet.
It's going to be easy.
Fair enough. But let me ask you this. I'm watching Portland go through this, and I wonder, and I'm sorry, Chap, how much energy have they expended just to get here? So I wonder what they're going to be like.
I would point to, like, Damian Lillard doesn't look like a guy who's slowing down right now. He looks like a guy who's picking up steam. I think Nurkic and Collins, two guys who hadn't played. Remember, Nurkic hasn't played since February of last year. Collins hasn't played since November. So, you know, they're both guys who are rested and ready to go and got, you know, they got nothing but energy and time right now. And then, you know, obviously Carmelo Anthony is looking in the best shape of his life. Now, CJ McCollum apparently has a back injury that he's dealing with. And as you point out, DeMarco, very accurately, they have zero wing depth. I mean, Melo is their wing, and, you know, he's not guarding anybody. So, you know, again, the Lakers are going to win, but it's just a question of how easy or slash difficult is this win going to be?
Amin El Hassan joining us here on the morning show. Amin, like you just said, going through the matchups that the Lakers are going to have to do, just the opponents, just, I mean, because they're going to get an eighth seed that if Damon stayed healthy, is probably a two or a three under regular circumstances. So they're going to have to beat three good teams to get to the finals. Add in the bubble elements of all of this, just the weirdness of this entire season. Is this arguably the hardest NBA title anybody's had to win in recent memory?
This is a question people asked before the bubble started, and I hesitate to say it's the hardest because hard is only in comparison to the rest of the landscape. If everybody's doing it, then it's not hard. It just is what it is. Hard to me is like the Houston Rockets being a sixth seed and beating 450-win teams with no home court advantage on the way to the finals, the championship. that's hard, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you clearly overcame circumstances that nobody else had to overcome. But in this case, whoever wins, they all went through the same stuff. It's not like someone had it easier here. So I wouldn't say it's the hardest championship, no.
Do you think Houston can come out of the West? What they're doing,
no.
Westbrook, Harden? No?
DeMarco, I'm going to tell you right now. I ain't even got them getting out the first round.
Really?
Wow.
Thunder. I got Thunder in six. I think, you know, I'm a big fan of execution basketball, right? One of my favorite things, basketball is a thinking man's game. We get wowed by the athleticism. We get wowed by the dunks and stuff. But the reality is, it's a thinking man's game. And Oklahoma City right now with Chris Paul is thinking the game light years ahead of what I think Houston does. Houston goes out there and just plays. And there's a strategy there, and it works for the most part. But I think running into a team like Oklahoma City with the kind of execution they have is probably the worst first-round matchup they could have had. They would have rather played Utah or even Denver in the first round than Oklahoma City. So, yeah, I got Thunder in six. I'm not a believer in the Rockets at all.
When you talk about execution basketball, Amin, is it just that when you're playing against them on any given night during a regular season, it's okay, what they do is so different than what everybody else does, you can't quite get ready for it, and then you're on to the next game the night after that. But in a series where you get to see it, you know, every other night for the better part of a week or two, does it get a lot easier to deal with the uniqueness of what it is they're throwing at you?
Well, I'm not going to say it's easier to deal with, but you definitely start coming up with more creative ways to combat the things that they do and more creative ways to draw them the things that they don't like to do. And so with that added time and that focus available, you get into a place where you can better match up with them than you would, as you said, like, oh, we had Oklahoma, we had Indiana last night, tomorrow we got Houston, the night after that we got New Orleans. And I'm just basically doing everything on the fly. The other part of this is what your players do. Can they execute a game plan, right? And I got to be honest with you. Russell Westbrook, to me, like, that's his biggest weakness. People say it's his jumper. It's like, it's not his jumper. It's his lack of execution. He can't stick to a game plan. So, for example, last year, I had the Blazers winning again. Like, I had Blazers in five. And everyone was like, no, well, those Thunder swept them in the regular season. Say, here's the deal. He can't help himself. So he got into that situation. Damian Lillard's hitting threes. Execution says, well, I'm going to play my strength. I'm going to get to the rack. I'm going to get to the free throw and put him in foul trouble. But Russell Westbrook doesn't do that. He tries to go 3-for-3 with Damian Lillard. You can't win that game. And to me, that's the crux of it right there. If you're in, you know, peeing matches with your opponent, then you lost already to an executing team. And, you know, everyone knows Chris Paul, the guy's like a computer out there. He's calculating every single play, and he knows what your weakness is, and knows what his strength is, and you're playing his game. You're not playing your game. And in that scenario, I don't have a lot of confidence in Houston to overcome that.
You know, it's funny. I thought the same thing about Westbrook you illustrated. It's too easy to draw him into a battle. And you can take him. You can take the entire team out by making him matter to his other guys. All right, what's your scouting report on AD? I know the last time he faced Portland in the postseason, he absolutely dominated, but this is a little bit different of a Portland squad. But just your scouting report, period, about AD going into the postseason and his maturation process.
Well, I think the last time I was on here, we talked about how concerning it is that he disappears in games. Even that first Clipper game where everyone said he played amazing, a non-factor in the fourth quarter. He had a couple of games where, against Toronto and against, I can't remember who the other opponent was, but he had like 7 or 8 field goal attempts. And these were all things they said, look, when you're that caliber of player for the team, you can't afford to have that kind of night. And I don't mean making 2 shots. I mean taking 7 shots, taking it. That's unacceptable. He's got to be aggressive every night because that's his role. He's the leading scorer on the best team in the conference. You don't get to say, they got it tonight. Especially if the team's not winning. Like, if you're blowing them out, then you can get to have a night off. But if we're in a game where we're losing or it's a close game, he owes it to his team to be aggressive offensively. And so you're right. He did flourish against Portland a couple years ago when he saw them in the playoffs. This is a different Portland team. It's a bigger Portland team because now, obviously, the addition of Hassan Whiteside gives them a 7-footer on the floor at all times. But, you know, at the end of the day, for Anthony Davis, I think he's got to be consistently aggressive out there offensively, because, you know, that's the burden of superstardom. You don't get to have a night off.
Amin L. Hassett, ESPN Front Office Insider. Amin, always fun. Thanks for coming on. Talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Thanks.
You got it. All right. Yeah, AD is a really interesting. I'm glad you asked that. I want to come back and I want to get your thoughts on that, DeMarco, about where he is as far as the dude that you don't want to mess with. We know that's LeBron. We know that's Damian Lillard. Where is AD on that list? That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. I thought you asked a really good question, DeMarco, about Anthony Davis. And I think that's what we're all trying to figure out with him, because there's no question Anthony Davis is one of the best players in the league. I mean, he's a 7-foot guy with a handle, with a jump shot. He knocked down the three. He's one of the best defenders in the league. He can go to the paint. He can defend the rim. He's got everything you would want in a player. He seems to be an unselfish teammate. All of the really best things that you would want. But if all of those things are true, and I think that we would agree that they are, why have his teams never had success in the postseason other than that one series against Portland, like you mentioned? I understand that the Pelicans were not a great team and that the roster was not filled with great players the way that this Laker roster is. But usually in basketball, if I have the best player on the court, and Anthony Davis is usually the best player on the court, I'm going to win some playoff games. They never did. Is it a concern?
A little bit. And I go back to the big ticket, Kevin Garnett, when he was up in Minnesota. I mean, it was almost the same. He was dominant. You're in every game. You've got the best player on the floor at various points or for an entire series. And it just won't happen on some of those teams. I put Anthony Davis in that same situation with the Pelicans. Now you bring him out here. He's with the Lakers. It's a championship pedigree. You put him with LeBron. So to me, I think this really is his best opportunity to be that guy. And I think he's going to get the opportunities against a first-round opponent like Portland. They'll probably give him a chance to shoot those threes, you know, and mm-hmm. let's see what he does. And when they do, and it's a different Portland squad than he faced a couple of years ago, but you're still going to have your chance to be big and bang and see what you can do down low. And if you're like me, I think the Lakers are best when he's at center anyway. And I think that's what you're going to see most of the time. So this will, in my opinion, will be his best chance to shine and be the guy that we all think he can be.
Tell me if you agree with this, because I believe this to be true. I think there are some guys that are number one talents that are much comfortable in number two roles. For instance, I want to use the guy that you're talking about with Kevin Garnett. Nobody's going to argue that Kevin Garnett's anything other than a phenomenal player. But like you said, when he was in Minnesota, they were good, but they never really made a ton of noise. A part of that was Shaq and Kobe were in LA at the same time. That didn't help. But the other part of it is when he did go to Boston, Paul Pierce was the guy in Boston. You know, mm-hmm. Paul Pierce was the number one guy. Paul Pierce was the guy that everybody was going to look at. Paul Pierce was the guy that was going to take that shot. And he was the guy that was the number one guy. Paul Pierce was comfortable in that role. And Kevin Garnett really thrived in that number two role. And this is a compliment to guys like LeBron and a compliment to guys like Kawhi Leonard. There are some guys that do not mind having all eyes on them all the time. And we're going to win or lose based on what I do, even if it has nothing to do with what I do. LeBron understands that this is going to, we're either going to win or lose based on me. Kawhi Leonard, I think, gets that as well. And they're comfortable in it. I don't know if Anthony Davis isn't better suited for the role that he's in right now, which is, look, Anthony Davis might be the best player on the team, but he's not the guy on the team. That's LeBron. LeBron is the man, and he's more comfortable in that number two. Like you said, it just feels like the number two role, even with number one talent, he's more comfortable in that secondary role.
I think you get a chance to be more dynamic as the number two guy versus the guy that this is my team. And I love when guys are alpha males and they take control of the team. They say, this is my team, this is my city, yada, yada, yada. It sounds good and is good as long as you can back it up. But being in that number two role, it's got to be comforting, man. I don't have to worry about any of that nonsense. I don't have to, you know, set the tone in the media. I don't have to think about anything else other than putting the ball in the basket. So I think Kareem flourished under that with Magic. Magic did all the talking. Magic was the star. Magic was the guy. All Kareem did was, you know, be the most dominant player on the floor at the time. So, yeah, I mean, I think AD, this is a – you're not going to get a better opportunity – to just dominate and work on your craft, be an artist without having to worry about how to pay the bills, if that makes any sense to you. Just go out and be what you were put on this earth to be, that big, that can do it all, that Euro game, you know, coupled with that street ball mentality. Absolutely. So it's not going to get any better. I hope that he's ready to seize the moment, because, you know, it's not going to get any better than it is right now for him.
I think that there's a bit of ego that gets caught up in this too. There's nothing wrong with being a number two guy. Like Damian Lillard is a number one. After every shot, it's put some bleeping respect on my name. He's looking into the camera. He loves being the center of attention. And then you got a guy like Paul George, who's made a career out of making sure he's never the guy on the team. I'll go over here. I'll do that. And oh, it's a chance to go over here. No, I don't want to do that. I'll go over here with Kawhi. That's kind of what he does. And it's not disrespectful. It's just understanding exactly who you are. That lead role is not for everybody. Not everybody needs to be Tom Cruise. You need some guys to fill out the rest of the movie for it to make it a good movie. And that's where I think Anthony Davis is. LeBron is the star. He's the headliner. He's the main event. But you need some other guys around him to do it. And if that guy is also happens to be one of the most talented guys in the league, perfect.
Yeah. AD is a great actor. LeBron's a movie star. You know what I mean? Yep. LeBron puts butts in seats. And all this guy does, AD, is just be the most dominant player on the floor. And I wouldn't be me if I didn't bring this back to wrestling. So Kawhi Leonard always strikes me as a guy like Brock Lesnar. He needs a Paul Heyman. All Brock Lesnar has to do is come out, stand in the ring and look menacing and let Paul Heyman talk them into the arena, right? And Brock will take care of the rest when they're there. That's what I get out of Kawhi Leonard, man. I mean, it seems like he could care less about, you know, being famous. I saw this on a quote. Someone asked him about being as famous as Steph Curry or as famous as LeBron. He's like, I don't care anything about that, man.
Yeah.
All I care about is having fun and playing basketball. To me, that is what a good number two guy is. I don't care about any of that stuff, man. I just want to play basketball, have fun, and win championships.
Yeah, Kawhi,
go ahead.
Kawhi's an interesting case because he's one of the very few that I believe when he says he doesn't care about that stuff.
Usually,
I don't care about that. I just want to win. It's like, shut up. Yes, you do. Of course, you know. Yeah, of course you do. You're everything you've ever done in your life is screaming, look at me. Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard deeply cares about what people are saying about him. That's been Dwight Howard's deal. You know, I don't care about it. Yeah, you do. Kawhi actually doesn't care. I don't know if he doesn't get it. I don't know if he's unaware of it or just flat out, you know what? I'm not doing that commercial because I don't give a damn. I don't need the money. I don't need the attention. I just want to go out here and play basketball and win games.
Yeah.
He's one of a very small group of guys that I believe when he says that stuff.
I can't remember a single thing that Tim Duncan ever endorsed, but I know who he is and where he is when he's in the room. And it seems like he's carrying championship gold with him everywhere he goes. So Kawhi Leonard's the same way. You don't have to say a word, and I respect you. I don't think Dame Lillard wants to be loved. I really don't. But I think he likes being hated.
Yeah, he likes eyeballs. He wants people to look at him. They don't have to be looking at him like they love him, but as long as they're looking, he's good.
Yeah, he's that sort of guy. And if you're not giving him the proper respect, he's going to go out and get it and earn it. So, and I love what we were talking about with Westbrook. It's the same thing. And I never even put it together until he said it just a minute ago. He's right. I think he can do anything that anybody else can do. And he sure does try, but his execution does break down in key situations. And that causes his teams to be knocked out earlier than they should. So, you know, Chris Paul is a great example of a guy who knows how to think the game. It's not sexy, but it works.
Yeah, it absolutely works. Russell Westbrook lets his ego get in the way. Then has for quite some time.
On right, the take floor it or shake the it. Floor. Yeah.
No doubt. I agree with you 100%. Take it or shake it's coming up next. Okay, DeMarco, let's start with an NFL topic. Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys are doing the smart thing by not locking Dak Prescott up to a long-term contract.
Ooh, wow.
Take it or shake it.
I'm going to take it. It seems like the NFL in modern history has been littered with teams that did the wrong thing by paying the wrong guy so much money, and then you're paying for it. Russell Wilson, I think, went through it for a little bit, but he played his way out of it. if you do the same thing in Dallas, if you're Jerry Jones and you give a ton of money to Dak Prescott and at the risk of other positions, I don't think he's as good or good enough like Russell Wilson to play his way out of it. So I'm going to take it. I think he's doing the exact right thing.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that if you got the guy that you love, if you have a Patrick Mahomes or a Russell Wilson or an Aaron Rodgers, by all means, let's get married. But if I just kind of like hanging out with you and you're kind of fun to be with on occasion, we can continue to date. I don't have to decide to have kids with you for the rest of my life, right? We can go do something else. I think he's doing it the right way as well. All right, let's move on to another quarterback in the NFL. It's his fifth year coming up here in the NFL. Jared Goff will have the best year of his career. Take it or shake it.
Wow. I'll take it from a stat standpoint. Now, best year meaning Super Bowl, and a better year would mean a Super Bowl victory. That's going to be tough considering that Patrick Mahomes still walks the earth, and, or I should say, the Royals minority owner is the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Right.
Still out there. So that's going to be tough to go through him. But stat-wise, completion percentage, interception rate, sacks taken, all that sort of stuff. Yes, I think after year five, where he is now, how comfortable he is in this offense with Sean McVay, I think you're going to see the best. Or I know you're going to see the best of Jared Goff, the best he has to offer, no doubt.
Well, he's going to need to, right? If the Rams are going to get back to where they want to go, Jared Goff's going to have the best year of his career because Todd Gurley's not there. And we'll see what Todd looks like in Atlanta. You know, that's going to affect the way we look at a lot of things, I think, this upcoming season, Gurley's performance there. But if the Rams are going to compete for that division, if the Rams are going to make some noise in the playoffs, Jared Goff's going to have to be the best version of himself.
Agreed. You know, and if Todd Gurley rips it, it's not like I'll hate the guy. You know, it's nothing personal. I'm not going to go there, but I'll look at him the same way I looked at Jerome Bettis. With us, you had an ankle and you were hurt. You go to Pittsburgh, become the bus, go to the Hall of Fame. Why couldn't you do that with us? You know, so yeah. We'll see. Right.
Timing is everything. All right, let's go to the NBA. We know that the Lakers are getting ready to finish their bubble season today against Sacramento. They'll open the playoffs. We'll know who that opponent is by the weekend. If the opponent is Portland, the opening round series for the Lakers will go seven games. Take it or shake it.
Oh, I'm shaking that. Shaking it. I think a win for Portland would be if it goes six or five. Or if it goes five, I think that's a win for Portland. But, you know, we're talking about how tough it's going to be for the Lakers to guard Dame Lillard. And he's having a fantastic run. And the energy it's going to take to get over that hump. Well, think about what they had to do to get to where they are, talking about Portland. So, and they still don't have an answer. There is no answer for LeBron James. There's a lot of question marks coming the other way for Portland. So I think the Lakers handle this in five or less.
Here's what needs to happen. They need to make sure that they handle it in six or less, because the very last thing you want to do with a dude like Damian Lillard in the world is give him a winner-take-all scenario. Right. If you're going into LeBron against Damian Lillard in a series, I'm going to take LeBron every time. LeBron against Damian Lillard in one game. I don't know. I mean, it's not crazy to think that Damian Lillard can go off the way that he did. I mean, he scored 60 or more points three times this season. You don't think he's got another one in him? In a one game scenario, he is a really scary guy. So the Lakers need to make sure that they don't go into that seventh game. All right, let's go to the next one here. Let's stay in the NBA again. The NBA bubble is working better, worse, or as expected going into it. Take it or shake it.
I'll take it. I think it's going better than thought.
Take it.
And, you know, there's some stuff there. There's some potential there, man. Really. When you look at it and the way it's constructed and how fun it is to watch, I mean, I'm still having a lot of fun watching basketball. It's still the same viewing pleasure from home, but just the atmosphere, making it a TV show around great basketball, there's a lot of potential there. I'm taking that.
Yeah, I'm thrilled that it's back. Let me start with that. I am thrilled that we have NBA basketball. I love watching these guys. It is, you know, the second most popular sport in this country for good reason, because it's awesome entertainment. There's something missing, and I think it's just as simple as the fans. You know what I mean? It's just the energy in these games. It's just not there. Like when we were watching Lillard and Doncic go back and forth the other night, If that were in Portland or Dallas, that place would have been rocking. And instead, it was just like, oh, okay, he's real good. Oh, so is he. Oh, he's real good. There's just no energy that comes along with it. I really, visually, I agree with you. They've done a great job of making it feel special, but the, you it's just palpable. The lack of energy, you can really feel it.
You know, that was the way back in the day. Remember when Slam Ball was trying to like take off?
Yeah,
that's what I mean, this is fun. It's just there's no energy in here because there's no one here.
Yeah, fans make a huge, you know, the athletes, I think a lot of the baseball guys are talking about it. Like you have to create your own energy, and it's just, it's much more difficult to do than if you got 30 or 40,000 people screaming your name.
This is true. Absolutely. All right.
Hello. Hello.
Let's go to the last one here.
Hello.
You will be making scotch eggs this weekend. Take it or shake it.
Oh, take it.
Hello.
Take it.
Since he mentioned it and I looked it up. What is it? I got to have this. There's a boiled egg wrapped in sausage that's breaded and fried. Come on. How can you not want that? And he sent me the recipe. I have everything in my fridge to make that. So this weekend, I will be making scotched eggs. No doubt.
You and I have known each other now, DeMarco, I guess we're going on our fifth year having done Rams and stuff together for a while. I have never seen you more excited for anything than when Jorge sent you the recipe for scotch eggs this morning. You're like, oh my goodness, I am making that.
I was dancing in there. Who came up with this? I love you. Who, this guy and whoever came up with the Cinnabon. I love you forever.
What's the go-to meal? If you're making it, what's the go-to meal in the Farr household?
You know, I'm pretty good with salmon. You know, I can do wonders with salmon. I make everybody. I think anyone who has to cook for a family makes a pretty good spaghetti. But my meat sauce is pretty darn good. So, you know, that's always something where everybody eats and doesn't say a word. So, it changes. You know, as long as I have time and I'm in my happy place, you know, I can make something up in the kitchen, man. You know,
I think
does it look like I can't cook?
I was going to say that answer come Monday morning, maybe scotch eggs. I have a feeling you're going to do a batch and be like, ooh, but what if I did this? What if I did that?
Yeah.
So
I
have a feeling.
Pretty good. I got some good pancakes. Yeah, I can flip them out of there.
You can't go wrong with there. All right. Joe Kelly is still upset about what's going on with the Astros. He had some things to say on Ross Stripling's podcast. We'll hear from him coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.